Welcome to this week's episode of Torah Conversations, where we discuss the weekly Torah portion read in synagogues all over the world from a Messianic and Christian perspective for Christians to connect with the Jewish roots of their faith. I'm your host, Frank. This week, we're going to be discussing the portion of Balak from Numbers 22:2 to 25:9. So if you have a Bible, I want to invite you to open it up and read it with us. I pray the Holy Spirit will touch your heart and change your life. Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of Torah Conversations, where we discuss the weekly Torah portion read in synagogues all over the world from a Messianic and Christian perspective for Christians to connect with the Jewish roots of their faith. And this week, we're going to be discussing the portion of Balak. It's a very interesting portion, and I have my guest David Guler with me. Hello, David. Ooh. Welcome back to the show again.
Hey, how are you guys? How are you, Frank?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? That was my question. How are you? David Guler, turning the table, everyone.
Come on, I've been enough episodes
Yes. Like I said before, you're part of the Torah Conversations family, so you're very welcome to turn the table anytime, just not in the way that Jesus did at the temple.
not that intensely, but
right, a different direction, not flipping the table, but turning it horizontally, which is totally fine. But how are you?
Actually, really good. I'm really happy. We just got rid of the annoying, law to put the masks on.
Yes.
So from yesterday, we are free to go and breathe the air.
Oh, 100%, that's so good.
Without any kind of blockade.
Yeah.
Around our face.
Yeah.
So this is really nice. Uh-huh. So it's been really going well.
Right.
Personally and in my workplace, it's really good.
I've got
upgraded to my salary, so it's really nice.
That's good. Are you still working at home or are you back to the office?
So I'm working in a hybrid model.
Okay.
Yeah, partially from home and also going to the office from time to time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, from time to time. That's not often at all.
You know, it's when I wake up in the morning and I just think, okay, do I want to go to the office or not?
And yeah, that's what I was told yesterday. I was told that ever since, because of Corona, people realize that a lot of people prefer to work from home. So many companies actually just work to improve that, just to say, okay, you can just work from home from now on, and then come to the office every once in a while.
Totally. I think what Corona made, it just made the companies realize that it's also good to listen to their employees and let them work from home. You know,
right.
The employees were always saying, I'm better working from home than from the office.
But is it not a challenge separating work from your private life or your family life?
That's a really good question. And I think that it's something that you need to learn and gain experience in it. Because at the beginning, it was really hard for me to separate the private life from professional life. Because I was really working too late at night, and I couldn't put the border between work and my personal life.
Right.
So, and later on, I understood that my family life and my wife are more important for me than the work. And I get paid anyway at the end of the month. It doesn't matter if I push too much or not. Mm. And I really invest in my work, but I know that my investment shouldn't take more than what it should be. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one thing that I realized. I've been self-employed just before the pandemic. So I was working from home anyway, but even after the pandemic, I will be working from home all the time. And what I realized is that having a day of rest, Shabbat, is so important.
Yeah. I totally agree with it. You know, I had one time when I just started working from home, I had one time when I opened my computer at Shabbat and I started just coding, you know, I'm a programmer. And it was such a huge mistake, you know, because half an hour later, I was feeling really exhausted.
Wow.
Just why do I do that? You know, I need my rest day. I need my time to really just not think and not do anything related to work and just be in my comfort place and with my wife it also took me away from God in a way, because I didn't have the quiet time to spend with him. And quiet time in the morning is not enough. Like sitting half an hour, even with God is not enough for you. So you need this Shabbat day in your life just to, you know, process everything and just bring everything to the Lord and just be with Him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And Shabbat too. Look at the Torah portion. That's what they're for. The Word of God, to lead us, to teach us about God Himself, right? And take a whole day. It's not just resting our bodies, it's resting our souls. It's to have God resting in us, with us, all around us, and us resting in Him.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's so important. And it is about Himself. It's about God first. You know, last time I was at synagogue, we were discussing, I think it was the portion of Shlach Lecha. At the end of it, somebody was gathering sticks on Shabbat, presumably to start a fire, and then they just stoned him to death.
Mm.
I mean, in the portion, not in the synagogue.
Oh, okay.
Gathering sticks. Not in the synagogue.
That was terrifying.
The portion you read about, at the end of the portion, you read about somebody gathering sticks to start a fire, and then they stoned him to death. That does not happen today in synagogues, guys. But... So they were discussing, they were saying that is so tough. Why would they do that? It just doesn't make sense. I was like, okay, that's every time we get into those moments, I feel like I need to say something. I was like, you know, it is about God resting with people. Because it says the first instance of Shabbat is that God rested. And the reason God rests is not because He gets tired. Because it says He never sleeps. God of Israel never sleeps or slumbers. He's not tired. So He wants to dwell with His people.
Mm.
That's the state that He wants to be in. And you look at that environment, especially a whole congregation with the presence of God right in the center, which causes them to have victories in all their battles. We're going to read about that. I mean, we read about that in the last portion.
Mm-hmm.
So God is the center of everything. So Shabbat is first about honoring God. And if we don't honor God, then we're not going to honor His other commandments.
True.
So even though that didn't quite answer the fact that, you know, why the person would deserve death, but it must have been very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is what, like, I personally really love. I don't accept rabbinic authority in any way, by no means. But I do like lighting candles.
Mm-hmm.
I do like doing all that ceremony and stuff, blessing the wine and blessing the bread and then eat a meal. That is just so important because it marks you, it just prepares your heart and it aligns your heart with the presence of God. That's what I find.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is super interesting, actually. It just reminds me of the time we had in Fridays in the army sometimes when we were closing the Shabbat. It's like when we just stay in the base and not returning home for the Friday and Saturday of the week. And then we did together the, you know, all the, you know, the candles and everything and the blessing the wine and the bread. We also sang many songs, you know, like good songs. And everything is really, it's really special because, you know, they don't really believe the same way. They see the Bible the same way as you do, but they do have a heart for God and they really wanted to dwell with Him and just be with Him. And you can feel it in some way. So I know for me, I was also in the spirit and it was good for me to be with them. But, you know, you do have a special feeling.
Yeah.
And it's really special.
Yeah. I find that, you know, especially for people in ministry as well, if you're in ministry, that is so important because you're doing the works of the Lord. You feel like, well, deceptively, you feel like you're always connected to Him when you're not. You know, the most vulnerable people in the church that fall into this trap of this work mentality are actually the prophetic people because they're constantly engaging, hearing from God. But there's a difference between engaging with the revelation of Jesus Himself, intimacy with Him, and engaging with revelation itself. So many prophetic people have a stronger relationship, a greater relationship with prophecy than their relationship with God.
They're more close to the gift or the profession of prophesying and not God Himself.
Yes. And I find that Shabbat aligns me back to the first commandment.
Mm.
It's a time for me to do that. And I do discipline myself to do that. I find that is so important. You don't realize that you've fallen from it until you actually do it. And I always the time is 6 minutes until candle lighting time. I must confess, I've not always kept that legalistically. But it does remind me that, you know, I need to get back to worshiping God and then experience intimacy, that's when I always, you know, receive the most healing. And I just feel refreshed, empowered at the end of Shabbat. But yeah, it's so important. It's this difference between having a relationship with revelation than with God. Mm. And it's especially for prophetic people, which is actually what we're discussing in this portion. Because this portion, the portion of Balak, we're looking at the most accurate false prophet of the Old Testament.
Most detailed one, obviously.
Yeah, who heard from Yahweh. And before we started recording, David, you said this was mind-boggling to you, that he was the most accurate. I shared my thoughts with you before we started recording. You said it kind of boggled your mind. Do you want to share a bit about that?
Yeah, I can share a little bit about that. Mm. I think when I first read about, firstly read about this portion, I think I was really young. I really thought that Bilam was a good guy, you know, when I read about it first time. Because he was really like just saying, okay, I will do whatever God tells me to do, and I will follow his words. But later on, when I read this portion again, 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 I suddenly start to see that his heart was not aligned with God.
No.
In no way. I mean, he always said, yeah, God, I will do whatever you say, and I will obey everything that you say. I'm not doing anything by myself.
Mm.
But you could see that he didn't really want to follow God's words. He just did it because he had to.
That's right.
And all his gifts of prophecy and everything. It's really amazing to see that he's saying true things.
But yes.
In his heart, he didn't understand God's heart truly.
That's right.
I mean, I couldn't understand why he didn't knew that God really loves Israel and God chose this nation. He rescued them. He saved them from Egypt. And he really gave them the Torah and everything. And he has a heart for this nation. And if really Bilam loved God, I mean, he really loved God, he would have understand that, you know.
Right,
I mean,
right.
That's really, it's something that really boggles my mind to see how he could be so accurate as a prophet, but still did not understand God's heart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're going to read this. Well, actually, the portion is Balak from Numbers 22:2 to 25:9, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a little over three and a half chapters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're actually going to see that in the beginning of the first chapter, chapter 22, he's actually a diviner from the Midianites, because Balak was the king of Moab, and he heard that Israel conquered so many people, because in the last portion, we see that Israel passed by different places, and then they said, no, Israel was trying to be friendly, and then they went and attacked them. And then, so Israel retaliated and conquered the land. Seems to be the story of the modern state, by the way. Isn't it?
We have to defend ourselves.
I mean, every war, Israel didn't start a war, but other nations attacked, and then Israel defended itself and then conquered all these other, and then got more land than there was to begin with. So this is what happened here. And then Balak, the king of Moab, was a bit, you know, insecure.
He was afraid.
Yeah, he was afraid. Insecure. He was afraid. So he wanted someone to curse Israel. So he actually paid this diviner with the spirit of divination, operator in divination, to curse this people, Israel. And they're from the Midianites. He spoke to the elders of the Midianites. He says, get Balaam to curse this people. He was actually paid to curse Israel. So he was not a true prophet of God to bless Israel. It's just that God had to step in and stop Balaam from doing that. God was protecting Israel. And then because Bilam was a diviner, he communed with the spirit realm. He was able to perceive what's going on in the spirit realm. He was able to have interactions with Elohim, gods. You know, we talked a little bit about this before the recording, that Elohim can be the Most High, the God of Israel, Elohim, or gods, because it's plural form. So we don't know. So we have to look at the context to see which one that they're referring to. But we're seeing that, you know, God came to Balaam and said this, and then the Most High, the Lord, Yahweh, came and stepped in and said something else. We see in this chapter.
Yeah, so we really see in this chapter how Balak sent all his, like, the best of the best of his to really trying to convince.
Right.
You can see that he was really afraid, and he saw that how strategic it was for him to curse Israel, you know, he also was really afraid of Israel because he saw the power they had.
Right.
So it was kind of a supernatural power which followed Israel into all of their battles, you know.
Yes.
We can also see later on how Bilam really describes Israel as a really like a lion, you know, which you can put into the ground, but it will raise up, you know, rise up.
Right.
So anyway, yeah. So and then what you said that you can see that later Bilam is like trying to he's saying God told me I can't do it and I can't do it, but let me try again. You know, It's funny because I really feel like Bilam was trying again with God. He was trying to get different answer, ask the same question and get a different answer every time. That's what I feel, because he's like, it wasn't enough for him the first time God told him, just don't go with these people.
Right.
It was like, okay, God, but let me ask you the same question again. Maybe you will change your mind.
Right.
I think this is really like, for me, it's a off sign, you know. It's like a red line or red alert kind of, which says that this is like a bad sign for a wrong prophet, you know, false prophet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it reminds me of actually Ezekiel 14, where it talks about. Well, actually, let's just go there. It says that in Ezekiel 14, then some elders of Israel came to me and sat down before me. And the word of the Lord came to me saying, son of man, these men have set up their idols in their hearts and have put right before their faces the stumbling block of their iniquity. Should I be consulted by them at all? Therefore speak to them and tell them, thus says the Lord God, any man of the house of Israel who sets up his idols in his heart, puts right before his face the stumbling block of his iniquity, and then comes to the prophet, I, the Lord, will be brought to give him an answer in the matter in view of the multitude of his idols, in order to lay hold of the hearts of the house of Israel who are estranged from me through all their idols. So in other words, they wanted something so badly that thing becomes their idol. It is their idol. They already decided that they want it. And then they come to the prophet. They're basically using the prophet for divination. Basically, they want the prophet to do what they want. What they want
the prophet to affirm what they're feeling, what their desires are.
Right. Rather than surrendering to God, surrendering to God's plan. So God says, I will give them the answer, but in keeping with their idolatry. In other words, God himself will actually give the people the answer that they wanted. But with that, God's going to charge them with idolatry. I mean, this is serious, and this is sort of what happened. Anyway, but we're gonna move on. So Balaam tries to, well, God speaks to Balaam and then stops him, and then used a donkey to speak to him and says, don't do it. And then Balaam was like, I can't do it. I really can't do it. But God says, okay, go, but you're only allowed to speak what I speak. Right? And then we see in chapter 23, they went from place to place. In each place, they built, like you said, they first went to Kiryat Chutzot.
Yes.
And then a high place of Baal. They built 7 altars and then 7 bulls, 7 rams. And then God was like, no. And then they went to another place and then they did the same thing. God was like, no. And then they went in the third place. God was like, no. God is not going to do that. So he just couldn't do it.
It's also written that only in the third time did Bilam understood God's heart. I mean, in the previous times, he just said, he was like a tunnel, you know, like a pipe for God's word. He just told like whatever God told him to say.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so anyway, and in the third time, Bilam really, it's written that he understood that God saw Israel as a good thing. Israel was his, like, one of the purposes. I mean, it's something he gave identity to, and it's something special for him. And so Bilam had the Spirit of the Lord for the first time in all these chapters. He received the Spirit of the Lord, and then he himself blessed Israel and talked about how good it is to be, how good are your tents, Israel, and dwelling with you, Israel. So anyway, I think it's really, really interesting in this third time that only then Bilam understood God's heart. And he is a prophet, you know. It just boggles my mind to how could he
a false prophet, be a, though.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. It's and really this weird. Is actually, you know, when you read that, you're like... I mean, when I read these words, like the words coming out of the mouth of the false prophet, I mean, I'm reading these words, I'm like, my heart's like stirred, actually. Wow, that's really, God really loves Israel. But it was coming out. It is a word from Yahweh. It's a true word, but it was coming out of the mouth of the false prophet. I find my own heart being stirred by it. But then he was a false prophet. And we know that false prophet, you know, listening to false prophets ultimately leads us to idolatry. And, you know, this is the deception, right? Just because a prophet gives an accurate word doesn't mean he's a true prophet, right? You know, we see him as a diviner, right? And then we see in Acts where there was this girl with a spirit of divination who said, these men are the men of the Most High who are showing them, right, the way of salvation, way of the Lord, right? And then get out, Jesus' name. So they're delivered.
But he was a false prophet, yeah.
Right, a true word, but a false prophet. But then you look at Jonah. Jonah gave like possibly one prophecy in his lifetime that didn't come to pass. But he was a true prophet. Why? Because he led people to worship Yahweh, to fear the Lord. I mean, this is just something that it's such an important lesson. You know, we would think that would be the end of it. Balaam tried to curse Israel, but he couldn't. But you would think that would be the end of it. But actually, no, Balaam did do something that caused detriment to the sons of Israel, because we read that in Revelation. Let's look at Revelation 2, 12 to 17, talks to, well, Jesus talking to the church in Pergamum, verse 14, but I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold the teachings of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit acts of immorality, which is exactly what we're seeing next in chapter 25. At the end of this portion, they started worshiping Baal. They started joining themselves to the Moabites to worship idols. They introduced, he actually conspired with Balak to entice Israel to idolatry. Because,
and you know what? It's really beautiful how what Jesus said just aligns so beautifully with this portion, because the last place where Balaam and Balak were was called Peor. And the idol that Israel fell into working and, you know, and everything was Baal Peor. It's like the same place. It just lines so beautifully what Jesus says in Revelation.
Is that in 1 Kings, right? That's with Elijah.
Yeah. And you can also see in verse 3 of 25, Baal Peor, this is the name of this idol.
So, I mean, the worship of Baal was single-handedly the biggest issue in Israel's history. And it actually started here with a false prophet giving the most accurate word from Yahweh.
Yeah, this is boggles my mind. I mean, and I think it's such a pure evil, you know, because his words were so precious and so pure and so holy, but his heart was not. And this is like the most dangerous things, most dangerous thing for us also to witness, also to this day, to see people who really have this gift of prophesying, or just have any gift, you know, any gift of faith or anything, but their heart is not with God, and they don't have God's love, and they don't love God in in a true sense. So this is something so dangerous, because it's so deceiving for us as believers.
Yeah.
Leading us astray.
Yeah, I mean, just because, I mean, this is a lesson for all of us. Just because somebody speaks an oracle from the Lord and you feel the anointing from God and your heart's so touched, and you go, yes, yes, yes. But if privately they're not living a life of holiness, ultimately believing in that prophet is going to lead us to idolatry and immorality, which is what happens. Because what happens here is that Balaam tried to curse Israel. He couldn't. So what he did was that by his accurate words, because he blessed Israel in the name of Yahweh, Israel's heart was warmed up to him. They must have received him as a true prophet, but he was a false one. So eventually he led Israel to idolatry. This is where it began.
Yeah.
This is such a heavy thing. Yeah. But we're going to actually get into the portion, you know, 3.5 chapters, but we're almost out of time. But any other thoughts do you have in just on this portion as a whole?
I really think this portion, as you said, has a really important lesson for us as believers to really, when we see someone really gifted or someone with really, which also, as you said, really touches our heart and steering our hearts with his words or whatever actions he does or she does, if his heart is not aligned with God, then we need to really, really be careful and keep away from this person or whatever he says. And we really need to be discerned and really need to be in God's presence and in his heart to really witness and understand what we are seeing and hearing.
Right. So let's actually get into the portion from Numbers 22:2.
Yes.
So the first part, Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. Moab was in great fear because of the people, for they were numerous. And Moab was in dread of the sons of Israel. And Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this horde will lick up all that is around us as the ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was the king of Moab at the time. So he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor at Petorah.
Yes.
In English, it's Pethor. How do they translate that? which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people to call him, saying, "Behold, a people came out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the surface of the land. They're living opposite me. Now, therefore, please come curse this people for me, since they're too mighty for me. Perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you blessed is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." So in other words, this is a powerful false prophet of the Midianites. Whatever he blesses gets blessed.
He had a reputation, by the way, so it means that he did it before.
Yeah, in today's terms, it would be maybe in India and some African nations, the witch doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Something like that. Or even something more powerful than that, you know, because he could hear Yahweh. He could hear the God of, you know, the God of gods, the highest one. So,
Yeah, but we're going to see, this is interesting. God steps in, right? It says, don't do it. In verse 9, it says, God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men to you?" Balaam said, "Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, send words to me." And then verse 12, God said to Balaam, "Do not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." So Balaam arose in the morning, said to Balak and the leaders, "Go back to your land, for Adonai, Yahweh, has refused to let me go with you." The leaders of Moab arose, went to Balak and said, "Balaam refused to come with us." So Balaam can actually hear from Yahweh as well as all the other gods. And this is interesting. We're going to keep that in mind. And then they asked Balaam again. Verse 20, God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them. But only the word which I speak to you shall you do." And then verse 21, Balaam actually obeys. And then verse 22, God was angry because Balaam obeyed. What's happening here? Like, God was angry, and then the angel of Yahweh took his hand and stepped in and with the donkey and stopped him. Any thoughts? Guesses?
Well, I think you know my thoughts about this one. I can just throw something, but I know you have a different answer. But my thought is that God took Balaam and put him to a test in a way, because I really feel that God knew Balaam's heart. I know he knew that Balaam wasn't aligned with God and his intention and his plan. He could hear God, but he could only hear him, you know, like a black box. He could hear just the words God said, but he couldn't see God's heart and what God really love and what God really searches for, you know. And at a point, God was really kind of, he understood that Balaam got his words, but he didn't want really to obey them. So he told them, "Okay, do whatever you feel like you should do. Do whatever what your heart tells you to do. But what I'm saying to you that you should follow my words and not go with Balak and curse this nation." And so God just let Balaam choose between him and his heart and whatever he wanted to do and go and curse Israel. And then Balaam had a choice. He could go with God and go against God. And he chose to go against God. And that's why I don't think that when he said go with these people, it was a commandment. I feel like it was he just gave him the two options. And he said, do whatever you feel like. But you know what I'm saying. You know what is my plan. I mean, I hope you know, because truly Balaam didn't know God's plan thoroughly, but he knew some of it. So
Yeah, that could be a possibility. Now, my take is this is a little bit different, which I'm not 100% set on. It's just another possibility. So the word Elohim doesn't necessarily mean Yahweh. or God of Israel. Mm-hmm. It can just mean gods or other gods, which are basically idols.
True.
Right? So there's Elyon, which is the most high God, that is the God of Israel, the uncreated God that is higher than all other gods, mm. who deserves all worship. And there's also his divine counsel, which we read about in Psalms 82. They're a council of gods, Elohim, which Yahweh created to govern nations with him. But these Elohim, of course, the word Elohim is actually plural. It just means gods, right? But Elohim, it can also be singular, referring to the one true God, Elohim. So there's Elohim, Elyon, the most high God, and Elohim, other gods, his divine counsel. So they were created by Yahweh to govern nations with him, but they rebelled. And those Elohim became idols of the Gentile nations. Mm-hmm. And I know this is like a foreign, like a new concept to most people. I'm also studying into this myself. So it's so Deuteronomy 32:8, when it says, when the Most High, Elyon, gave nations, Gentile nations, their lot, when he separated the sons of man, he set up the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of, now the Masoretic text says, the sons of Israel, according to the number of the sons of Israel. But the Septuagint and the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are the earliest scrolls that of text that we can find, they both say sons of God, referring to this divine council. Mm-hmm. So they were the ones whom Yahweh originally intended to govern nations with him, with each Elohim, each little God, governing a nation, while Israel was kept Yahweh himself. Mm. Now, they weren't uncreated like Yahweh, and they were not to be worshipped. So this is very, very important, because when most people hear there are other gods, they think, oh, does that mean we're supposed to worship all the other gods? Does that mean the Bible approves idolatry? No, they were gods, but not to be worshipped like Yahweh, the one true God, living God, right? They were just supposed to govern with Yahweh, but they rebelled and they became idols among the Gentile nations. So we have different cultures today worshiping various kinds of different gods, and it's the result of that. So this is the context when we look at an idolater from another nation who worships a different god, such as Bilam, right? As a diviner who interacted with spiritual entities in the unseen realm, he would have been able to receive information or revelation from both evil spirit beings as well as the holy ones. Just depends who shows up, right? So Elohim doesn't necessarily mean the God of Israel. It could be other gods or other idols. Now, which one the Bible's referring to, it depends on the context, right? Especially when it comes to a false prophet or a diviner. So in verse 12, we see Elohim saying, don't go. That's the God of Israel, because we know this, because Bilam recognized him as Yahweh.
Yes.
In verse 13, he says, I can't go because Yahweh has refused to let me go. And then Balak insisted. So Bilam says, let me ask again. And then verse 20, Elohim came to Bilam at night, says, if they call you, go with them, but do as I say. And then Bilam goes. Now, it doesn't actually say whether this Elohim is Yahweh, God of Israel, or other Elohim. It could well be one of the other gods, other idols, other Elohim, right? So Bilam goes and then with the people, and then Elohim, God of Israel, gets angry because Bilam went, and an angel of Yahweh stood as an adversary. And by the way, the Hebrew word is Satan, true. Satan. Right,
because that's the meaning of the name Satan. It's like it's adversary, someone who deceives you and not deceives you, but just takes you away from the way, or just blocks your way.
Yeah. So Satan isn't necessarily the devil. Yeah. It just means an adversary. Anyone who seeks to stop an agenda. In this case, it's God Himself.
True.
Right? So yeah. So to summarize, it goes like this: verse 12, God Yahweh says, "Don't go." Verse 13, Bilam says, I can't go because Yahweh told me not to. And then verse 14, Balak says, please come. And then verse 19, Balaam says, okay, let me ask again. And then verse 20, one of the other Elohim idols comes to tell Balaam to go. And then verse 21, Balaam goes. And then verse 22, Yahweh gets angry. So yeah, so I'm not 100% sure on this, but it is just a possibility.
This is really deep, actually, Frank, I have to say.
Mm.
I never heard this interpretation of verse, actually. It's really interesting.
It's fascinating. I'm still studying into it. There's the whole study about the divine council and the unseen realm. Because we're talking about a false prophet who perceives from the unseen realm, but he doesn't recognize the right source. He just receives from whatever source he gets.
True, true.
Right, so he's and it's go on.
I mean, it's also in a way, it's like when Jesus says that the sheep, can identify and recognize his voice. It's because they were aligned with his heart, but Balaam was not aligned with God's heart, so he couldn't identify his voice really clearly. So he could sometimes, you know, miss and think it was Yahweh was speaking to him, but it was the other way. So
Yeah. And what I find really fascinating is that in verse 26, the angel of the Lord went further and stood in the narrow place where there was a... And then the donkey, right? He opened the mouth of the donkey and spoke to Balaam. What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? Because the donkey wasn't doing it. So Balaam started hitting it, striking it with his stick. And then the donkey started talking. But Balaam wasn't surprised that the donkey was talking.
True.
Which tells me that as a diviner, he's seen that happen before.
In many various forms, I guess.
Yeah. Supernaturally. Gods.
It wasn't weird for him. It wasn't something unusual for him to hear donkeys.
Right. I don't have proof in this. I need to look into this, but I think that stuff is the supernatural stuff like that happens in those days. They see that. And then, So we're really like looking into the world of the false, how a false prophet operates. We're actually studying a false prophet, how he operates. He perceives from the spirit realm, but he doesn't get from the right source. He hears from Yahweh, but he hears from other things as well.
And that's his heart was not right. I think it's really important as a prophet. I don't know. I'm not a prophet by myself, but I think as a prophet, I think it's important to have the discernment gift, you know, that you can discern between God's voice and other voices in your life, because you could really so easily hear other voices and think that they are God and then go in a way and then suddenly find yourself in the middle of false ideology and false, you know, prophesying. And
I think
it's really important to discern.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in the prophetic movement, we always say never be impressed by someone's gifting, but always be impressed by their character and their intimacy with God. And, you know, just because someone can give an accurate word, and not just accurate words, but an anointed word from God himself, doesn't mean they're living for God without compromise, doesn't mean they're living right. And when, I mean, none of us are perfect, but I mean, that's the point of sanctification, right? But when issues of compromise are left unchecked, undealt with, they'll ultimately lead us astray, which is exactly what Balaam did to Israel. He caused Israel to compromise and worship Baal. And this is what happened. So by their fruit, you will know them, right? Jesus says, not by their prophetic accuracy. And you know, there's this whole movement in recent months to keep prophets accountable for supposedly prophesying inaccurately about, you know, number 45. And I'll just say this. At the end of the day, it's not about accuracy. It's important, which we're all growing in accuracy, okay? But at the end of the day, it's not about accuracy. It's about walking with Yahweh in intimacy, living righteously, and representing his heart to people. And it's better to do that and prophesy slightly inaccurately than to have 100% accuracy and not living right. Yeah. You know, it's dangerous. Anyways, we have a couple more chapters, but we are really running out of time in this episode. But if you want to listen to the full conversation on this portion, we're just merely getting started. I want to encourage you to log on to patreon.com/ Tor Conversations. That's patreon.com/Tor Conversations. And you're going to hear the full conversation. Me and David are going to stay on for a little bit and just discuss the rest of the portion and our thoughts. It's a really, it's a big portion. It's a big topic.
Yeah. It's huge. So, and it's full of details.
Yes. So we're going to get into all that, but I want to encourage you to go and become a monthly supporter and then you'll be able to hear the full conversation. But we've packed as much as we could in this one episode and hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you, David, for coming on the show this week.
I'm pleased.
All right. Well, if you guys enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major platforms. Visit our website, torahconversations.com, and connect with us on Instagram and become a monthly supporter on patreon.com/torahconversations. Have a great weekend, everyone. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.